हरिः ॐ सहनवतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्थो मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिवसरि गौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Page 27. In his additional notes for this chapter, Srila Prabhupada adds, regarding transmigration of the soul, Srila Madhvacharya gives the following notes. When one is awake, whatever one sees or hears is impressed upon the mind, which later works in dreams to show one different experiences, although in dreams one appears to accept a different body. For example, when one is awake, one does business and talks with customers. And similarly, in dreams, one meets various customers, asks about business, and gives quotations. Madhvacharya says, therefore, that dreams take place according to what one sees, hears, and remembers. When one reawakens, of course, one forgets the body of the dream. This forgetfulness is called apasmriti. Thus, we are changing bodies because we are sometimes dreaming, sometimes awake, and sometimes forgetful. Forgetfulness of our previously created body is called death, and our work in the present body is called life. After death, one cannot remember the activities of one's previous body, whether imaginary or factual. Right? So one doesn't remember from last life the previous activities done, and one also does not remember the previous dreams. Right? So the point is that the body is always changing. So this idea that the transmigration of the soul, this aspect then is going to happen, and one's not going to know what it is anyway. So the point is this Kamsa won't know that he was Kamsa before, so it doesn't matter. He'll be situated wherever he is, and so therefore life will go on. So why get so worried about it? Vasudev continued, at the time of death, according to the thinking, feeling, and willing of the mind, which is involved in fruitive activities, one receives a particular body. In other words, the body develops according to the activities of the mind. Changes of body are due to the flickering of the mind, or otherwise the soul could remain in its original spiritual body. Right? So, the original body is there. Why don't we remain there? Because the mind changes. Right? The whole point is the mind, because of its flickering nature, it thinks of other things, on how it could enjoy itself, how it could be situated, and that way be more happy. Right? And so because of that, that changes the bodies we're in. Because otherwise the subtle aspect is we're always changing. It means the body itself is changing due to the mentality. Then in our dreams it's changing. So many different things. Does that make sense? So it's all based on the mind. So if the mind wasn't flickering, then why would we change from the original spiritual body? Does that make sense? Yes.
So the doubt might be that in the Vasudev Sattva there's no mind. So how is that?
No, it'll be there, because your subtle body goes with you. It's just the gross body's not there. So the subtle body's there. So the identity and false ego, I'm the controller and enjoyer, is there. That's why they're within the Mahatattva. So that's why they can be in that Vasudev Sattva and still come back into the material world. But here it's talking about the original spiritual body, means the spiritual form we have before we take on this mentality. But when we take on this mentality, that changes then, because the mind has changed into mundane, that means it's going to manifest a mundane body. So in other words, what this just pointed out is that we originally in a spiritual form, and then from there, then we take on material consciousness. Therefore, then the mind manifests a gross body instead of the spiritual body. So if one is absorbed in Krishna and all that, that maintains the spiritual form. But when one's not, then that will generate a material form. So right here, that one could remain. It's not one would get, one would this and that. One could remain. In other words, Vasudeva has just made the point, is we're originally in the spiritual environment, in a spiritual form. But because we've turned our attention from Krishna to Krishna's energies without Krishna, that's mundane, with the idea of us enjoying rather than Krishna enjoying. So then that gives rise to us leaving that spiritual environment and coming into the mundane environment. Right. So here's a direct point being made of there, not subtle.
The jiva being tapasya will always have that possibility.
Will always have the possibility, but once one's been there, one will never take advantage of it. Just like, let's say, okay, you've been involved in cooking, no? Okay. Now, do you ever just wonder about the fire? And after you've lit the fire, then before you put the pot on, just think about, well, maybe I could put my finger in there. What does it feel like? What is it? Do you ever do that? But did you ever do that at one point? And that's why now you don't do that. Yeah, so once coming to the material world, when one goes to the spiritual world, one's not going to want to come here again. Because we're looking at, oh, I have my material kind of, then there's the spiritual, and then the material. We kind of seem more on an equal level. We know the spiritual is better, but it would be just like, okay, I have a bucket full of rasgulas, and I have a bucket full of garbage. Right? Now, pigs, they're going to go for the garbage. Then eat the sweets, right? You always eat the salties first, then eat the sweets. Right? But we're not going to bother with the garbage. That's actually the point. For those on the pure platform, then any concept and anything mundane, it just doesn't have any importance at all. It's not like you can, well, you know, you have this and we have that, and, you know, I could go to, you know, the temple for the program, but then, you know, I could stay at home and do this or that, or, you know, you wouldn't have, they're not equal. Does that make sense? So, once one's come to that platform, then being on that Brahma-Bhuta platform, then there's no comparison. You know? It's like this wonderful resort, and then this desert that, you know, you have a eyedropper that has one drop of water in it. It's like, knock yourself out, you know? Water the desert here, you know? Does that make sense? So that's why then there's no problem. Even though mathematically, yes, you could say the jiva could fall, but they won't. One, from their own, they're not going to make the same mistake. And two, Krishna won't allow them to make that mistake.
So then can you say that technically the Nitya Baddhas do not fall under the title of Tatastha because now they will never fall?
The Nitya Baddhas or the Nitya Muktas?
Sorry.
The Nitya Muktas.
Yeah, liberated souls.
Would they be technically not categorized as tatastha? But why wouldn't they be?
Because they already have an experience of this burning of the fingers, so they will never fall.
So they won't fall, so they're not called tatastha. But have you ever heard the example of iron and fire as the definition of the absolute position of the jiva? Right? Now, the point is, you leave the iron and fire, it will be like fire. You know, the coals are there, the iron's there, it's all happening, it's all fire. But can you point out what's iron? So what is our point? Is it about that, iron's in fire, but you can always tell it's iron, so therefore, it's always, they're in the eternal pastimes, and someone wants to come along, and someone else goes, psst, well, he's a jiva, like that, and they all go, oh, like that, and then, you understand? No, it points out the fire aspect, because it's in the fire, it burns like fire, it's as good as fire. So that means in the spiritual world, the jivas and the internal potency, they all function on the same platform. Mm-hmm. You don't make a distinction. You understand? Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur elaborates, now a question arises. The mind can only enjoy because of the influence of the devatas over the mind, so that he becomes absorbed in the image of a king or Indra. But how is it possible for the mind to get enjoyment meant for someone else? This verse answers that question. Whatever objects among the five elements, earth, water, etc., the mind always subjects to so many impressions, vikaratmaka, translated as changing from one type of thinking, feeling, and willing to another, becomes attached to those objects it attains. Because of its close association with the mind, the soul, asau dehi, translated as the spirit soul who accepts such a body, also enjoys those objects. Prapyamana jayate, translated as being surrendered to such a condition, takes birth, along with the absorbed mind. Right? So the mind is absorbed in these things, and therefore the jiva, because of their proximity where they identify with it, then they also then consider, I am enjoying. Is this like that? Because you could say, well, how could you enjoy if it's someone else? Like that. But it's there. Just like, let's say, the child is there playing and is happy, then the parents are happy. Like that, because of the proximity, because of that attachment. Yeah, someone else's kid is there playing and enjoying themselves, then you're kind of looking around, where are the parents? Why don't they take care of their kid? Right? But if it's your kid, then you're so happy. And others are grumbling. It's go, can't you see the kid's happy? What are you upset about? Right? Yes. Srila Prabhupada adds, by regulative practice, one can control the mind. And this is the purpose of the yoga system. Abhyasa yoga yuktena. Bhagavad Gita 8:8. But there's a chance of failure with the yoga system, especially in this age of Kali. Because the yoga system uses artificial means, right? It means it's mechanical. So here, we're not talking about yoga in general, we're talking about yoga in specific, the Astanga system, right? That it's meant to control the mind so that one can come to the transcendental point. But it uses artificial means, it's mechanical, right? If the mind is engaged in bhakti yoga, however, by the grace of Krishna, one can very easily control it. So by serving Krishna, Krishna is pleased, then you can control the mind. Otherwise, we're not going to control the mind on our own. We have to remember that we're 1/10,000th the tip of the hair. It doesn't say that's how big our mind is. Right? I mean, talk to some people, they'll probably agree with that. But, in other words, the mind is situated in the heart. Right? So the mind then is an element. It's so much greater than the jiva. Right? But we become, how are we going to control it? So, the same way, we're not going to control the material energy. We're too small. But by surrender to Krishna, Krishna will control. That's why it probably gives the example. You go into some person's house, and then a dog comes out to greet you. How do you control the dog? You're just such a nice guy, right? No. It's because the master comes out and tells the dog to stand down. That's how it's controlled. So, when we surrender to Krishna, then the dog's controlled. But if we're not surrendered to Krishna, then you have to remember that, the pit bull, it bites until the teeth meet. That's its nature. Does that make sense? So until something falls off and the teeth meet, it's not happy. So, therefore, until Krishna calls off Maya, then nothing changes. So that we see some change in our life, some less attachment to Maya, more knowledge about that, like this, that's by Krishna's grace. We're performing devotional service under the direction of the spiritual master. Therefore, we're getting these results. But it's not because, yes, I'm such a good sadhaka, that's why I got these results. No, it's because you are steady in your service to Krishna, Krishna being pleased, that's why you got the results. Does that make sense? Yeah? When the senses are purified and engaged in Krishna's service, one achieves the highest perfection. Rishikena, Rishikesha, Sevanam, Bhakti Ruchate. Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Lila, 19.170. The Krishna consciousness movement is a movement of bhakti. Vairagya Vidya Nija Bhakti Yoga. Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Lila, 6.254. By following the principles of this movement, one becomes disassociated from material mental concoctions and is established on the original platform of the eternal relationship between the living entity and the Supreme Personality of Godhead as servant and master. This, in summary, is the purpose of the Krishna consciousness movement. Right? That's what we're trying to establish. All other things are simply to support that. Right? So in other words, this is the purpose of the Krishna conscious movement, right? To become disassociated with the mundane and to become established on the eternal relationship between the living entity and Krishna. Right? So it's not so much about being disassociated with what's here, is that because we are doing that, we're not interested in Krishna. So we're trying to become established in Krishna, right? So how is that going to happen? In other words, this is the purpose. Right? Does that make sense? That's the actual purpose. Now, what are the methods to go about getting this? Right? Hearing and chanting, the association of devotees, worshipping the deity, right? Taking prasad, living in the dham. Does that make sense? Then how do we do those things? Then there's breakdowns of that, you know, chanting, okay, better in the morning, and that when it's peaceful, and all these things like that. Worship the deity, here are the rules, all these things like that. Living in the dham, okay, these are the considerations. Okay, then, okay, now, okay, these considerations, you offer artik, what's the technique of offering artik? Well, you have the lamp there and you wave the lamp, but how do you hold the lamp? So you hold the lamp like this. You understand? So everything's in pursuance of this one thing. Does that make sense? That's how the whole thing works. But if you don't understand that this is, and one thinks that if we do this, if we arrange this, then everything will be fabulous. We've missed the point. No, what we're doing is simply a service. Krishna being pleased, that's why it becomes fabulous. Does that make sense? That's the whole thing. Yeah. So that's what it's for. It's for coming to that understanding. That's why we do what we do.
Right.
Yes.
Sometimes we do a service and with the right intention, the right mood, and everything is like, you know, bona fide. And still, it doesn't really help. It doesn't give the good result.
But what's the result you're looking for?
Well, does that mean that Krishna's not pleased?
No. What result are you looking for?
To please Krishna.
How do you know Krishna's not pleased?
Because it just turns out bad.
No, but what turns out bad?
Like, you can't continue doing that service anymore. Like, there's just too many obstacles.
So here, this is the point. Let's look at that. So, what we're thinking is the result of my doing that service, will all the obstacles will go away.
No, but it's to the point where you just can't continue doing it.
But we're thinking that doing service means all obstacles will go away. Yudhishthira Maharaj, they're kshatriyas, they're running a kingdom. So many obstacles come up, they can't run a kingdom. They end up out sitting out in the forest.
Mm-hmm.
But do we see them as any less Krishna conscious? Sitting in the forest.
No.
And much of the time we see is that the interaction with Krishna and all that, many times is more when they're in the forest than when they're in the in the city and running their kingdoms. So in other words, when you look at the service, look at being Krishna conscious, not in the specific results of the service. That's why I ask, what are you looking for in the service? So you said pleasing Krishna.
Yeah.
But you're judging that by if I continue in this or not. So it's actually you're looking at, if I do the service, then if I'm advancing, the service should go more nicely. But the point is no, absorption in Krishna, that should go more nicely.
But the service is for others, like it's for
others. But the point is it's not about that. See, because we're taking it that the service itself, the form of the service is the real substance. No, it's just being able to do service.
Yeah.
That's the substance.
Yeah, for me, but for preaching purposes.
But the point is it's the effort.
Mm-hmm.
Right? In other words, we make an effort and things move forward. And then, like Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he's there, he's preaching. See, previously people did not like Gaudiya Vaishnavas. You know, in the early 1800s, like that, people did not, like cultured gentlemen did not like them. Educated gentlemen did not like them. Because they saw they were a bunch of, you know, ragtag kind of people who had no knowledge, had no practice, they didn't behave nicely, they didn't deal nicely, and they were just engaged in all kinds of stupid stuff. Right? So Bhaktivinoda Thakur comes along, distinguished family, educated. He preaches about what is actual Gaudiya Vaishnavism, right? Because the Sahajiyas, their point is we don't need to study Shastra, we don't need to follow rules. So then people don't like them. So then he points out how great is the knowledge of the Gaudiyas and their practices and everything like that. So then they become socially accepted by the, you know, aristocracy, right? Once that happens, now these Sahajiyas and all those guys take advantage and they start doing their preaching, because now that they're okay, now people start looking, you know, when they preach and come in contact, and people take, and then it all goes out the window. Does that make sense? And then Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur comes, and then he preaches really strongly on that, you know, these divisions, and like that, and then establishes, you know, very clear again. You understand? So that's just, it's service. Otherwise, you could think Mother Yashoda cooked lunch and fed Krishna. Now he should be eternally satisfied with that. She doesn't have to cook lunch again. Now that would be good, right? But every day she has to cook. In fact, the guy eats six times a day. You know, I mean, what's going on here? You know, so is Mother Yashoda failing in her service? Is she not advancing? Or what's going wrong here? You know, you understand? So the point is don't look at the mundane results as that's the goal. You, since we want results for Krishna, we say, okay, how to get results for Krishna.
Yeah.
So if something goes wrong, then we try to adjust that to make it go right for Krishna. But it's our trying to get good results for Krishna that's the service.
Yeah.
Not that result was there. My son. But on the transcendental platform, we don't make a distinction. But at the same time, is if we make the distinction that no, it's the results that are the main point, not the effort, then at that point, that's where things don't work so well.
Well, I guess I misunderstood what you said, because you said that when the service is going nicely, then that means Krishna is happy. So
yeah,
you mean service means,
yeah. But the point is that it's okay. Let's try a different angle. Okay. The guy is sitting there, he's committed himself to the relationship, and he's putting in his effort, you know, he does his occupation, he gets money, he takes out the garbage, you know, he changes the light bulbs, he fixes the toilet when it stops, you know, working. He does all that. Now, why is he doing that?
To maintain,
but what's the basis? What is he maintaining? Relationship, and that's based on affection.
Yeah.
Okay? All right. So, and wife is doing her stuff, and he's cool. Everything's cool, right? But is it cool? No. on a regular basis, he has to be telling the wife how much she's important. Right? Why? It's already been done. It's obvious. Because that relationship, that interaction, that's nice. You know what I'm saying? Because for the guy, he thinks, okay, we're at this point in the relationship. We've moved it to the next point, and then it moves to the next point. So he just sees this natural just development like that. Right? But in reality, when you look at a graph, what does it look like? It goes like that, even if it's going up. Right? Because if, let's say, he arranged, got her some flowers, did she like that? So it was nice. Should it never happen again because it's already been done? So it happens again. You understand? So, therefore, our going out, making that effort, that's nice. So now it should just eternally go into this Brahman platform of niceness? No, it's again. That's why Krishna has his Astakaliya Leela. Every day, the same basic activities are going on. Because they're nice. Getting up in the morning is nice. Going to bed at night is nice. Taking lunch is nice. Right? So then every day he's there. Mother just showed his house. The cowherd boys are there. The gopis have cooked and they're serving. And Nanda and Upananda and all the elders are there. And so then they're interacting. But, you know, what will be discussed, what will be this, that, it'll all be different. What's cooked is slightly different. Everything's... But it's the same principle is there. So these are nice things. So they're done again. So we go out, we preach, we do something, we establish something that's nice. Then it needs to be done again. Right? So in the spiritual world, then there it's just different tastes of this. Here the material world is because of the temporary nature. That's why then everything goes. Because you've established something, it'll just go. Because that's the way the world works. You build a nice temple, but after some time you have to fix it. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. You paint the lotus building, but after 5 years you got to paint it again. Does that make sense? So he could say, no, but I did that as transcendental service. How come it doesn't last forever? Why do I have to paint it again? You understand? So in other words, you just see how to do service and don't worry that these things happen. You try to work on how to make it work the best, to last the best, but don't worry that it doesn't last because it's the material world. It's not supposed to last. But what lasts is your effort. That's what's always there. That's what when we say stability in Krishna consciousness, we're talking about that. Is that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah? Okay. You had something? Very good, thank you. Yeah? Vasudev continued. When the luminaries in the sky, such as the moon, the sun, and the stars, are reflected in liquids like oil or water, they appear to be of different shapes, sometimes round, sometimes long, and so on, because of the movements of the wind. Similarly, when the living entity, the soul, is absorbed in materialistic thoughts, he accepts various manifestations as his own identity because of ignorance. In other words, one is bewildered by mental concoctions because of agitation from the material modes of nature. Srila Prabhupada comments. This verse gives a very good example by which to understand the different positions of the eternal spirit soul in the material world and how the soul takes on different bodies. Dehantara praptihi. Bhagavad Gita 2.13. The moon is stationary and is one, but when it is reflected in water or oil, it appears to take different shapes because of the movements of the wind. Similarly, the soul is the eternal servant of Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But when put into the material modes of nature, it takes different bodies, becomes sometimes as a demigod, sometimes a man, a dog, a tree, and so on. By the influence of Maya, the illusory potency of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the living entity thinks that he is this person, that person, American, Indian, cat, dog, tree, or whatever. This is called Maya. When one is free from this bewilderment and understands that the soul does not belong to any shape of this material world, one is situated on the spiritual platform, Brahma-Bhuta. Right? So, that will, how you say, the living entity, because he's identifying with, it's just like you see the reflection in the water, then depending upon the wind blowing, that reflection changes. So now, because it's changing, now you have, you know, funny ripples on your face now, or, you know, your head's longer, or, you know, what happened at the top of your head, because now it's so elongated it doesn't even fit in the pot. You know what I'm saying? But because of identifying with it, we think I am that. So as the modes of nature change, then the form changes. And so we think we're that, but the soul goes is never affected by that. It never changes. It's just because it identifies with the material energy. The modes of nature are creating these bodies. This is just the natural development. You have one particular thing, it will just naturally go into the next, into the next, into the next. And the living entity, depending upon their identification with it, then they can, you know, make it go a little this way or that way or something like that. But they're not doing it. Does that make sense? So that's the whole thing. That's the illusion. Yeah? This realization is sometimes explained as nirakara, or formlessness. This formlessness, however, does not mean that the soul has no form. The soul has form, but the external agitating form he has acquired because of material contamination is false. So we say the soul comes to the realization of nirakar, means he understands, I don't have a material form. I'm the soul. So therefore we have the spiritual form. Right? Similarly, God is also described as nirakar, which means that God has no material form, but is Satchitananda Vigraha, 5.1. Right? So according to the Vedanta Sutra, the Lord is eternally nirakar and has a spiritual form of Satchitananda. So the soul, not being on that platform of nirakar, then by association with the Lord, they can then, following in the footsteps of the Lord, come to that platform where they become nirakar. And then that means they'll have that spiritual form of Satchitananda. Does that make sense? The living entity is part and parcel of the Supreme Satchitananda Vigraha, but his material forms are temporary or illusory. Both the living entity and the Supreme Lord have original spiritual forms, Satchitananda Vigraha, but the Lord, the Supreme, does not change his form. The Lord appears as he is, whereas the living entity appears because material nature forces him to accept different forms. When the living entity receives these different forms, he identifies with them and not with his original spiritual form. So you see, a lot is being put on this. There is an original spiritual form because there's the original mentality, right, of servant of Krishna. But if we don't take up that mood, then we don't maintain that form. We take on the form that is appropriate for the particular way we want to engage or interact with Krishna's energies without Krishna. Does that make sense? So if it's a matter of power, then one may have positions, you know, in the society. If it's fame, then one has those kind of attributes. If it's wealth, if it's whatever it is, whatever is of Krishna's opulences that we are interested in without Krishna, that's the forms that the material modes of nature will manifest. Right? So that's the akar. Right? So then when we give up that becomes nirakar, then we go back to the original transcendental nature. Yes?
So the question is, what happens to that form while we are here? Do we carry that same original form with us?
Well, I mean, there's two basically explanations. One is that it becomes covered. You know, just like you have gold ring and you cover it in mud, the gold's still there. It's just that you can't appreciate it. You just see mud. You know, it's like if your mom walks into the house and there's a gold ring covered in mud on the middle of the rug, she's going to do, what's this mud here? Get this out of here. Right? Because it's just dealt with as mud. You know, but as soon as you take it to the kitchen and wash it off and all that, then the mood changes. Right? So that's one aspect, is that it gets covered. You know, just like you have the gross body, then you have, that's the subtle body, then you have the carnassure, but then you have the spiritual form. But it's said that it becomes condensed, so it's, you know, it's contained within the 1/10,000th of the tip of the hair because of the consciousness. Another is that Jiva Goswami makes the point, it's like when you go into the house, you know, all the outside stuff you hang up at the door. So before coming to the material world, then you hang up your spiritual form there, and then like that. You know, so like that. But the point is it's a matter of a manifestation of the consciousness. So that's the nature of the living entity as servant. This is the form. Then when they use that form properly, then they develop love for Krishna, then they maintain that form eternally. But if they don't take up service to Krishna, then you have to be subservient to one energy of the Lord. That's the meaning of tatasta. They're subservient to internal potency, or the internal potency as its reflection is external. And so then they take up that form, so then you don't see the other. So either way, is the form is there, but the point is when we become nirakar, then we can actually use it. Right? Because as long as we're identifying with the material, then how do we use the spiritual? You know, as soon as you stop identifying the material, even though the material's there, then you can use the spiritual. Does that make sense? Therefore, you see, then great, you know, advanced devotees, even while in this the form here, they can meditate upon the activities of the Lord there in their spiritual form, and be involved in the activities there. Like that example of Raghunath Das Goswami, he gets sick, and they bring the doctor, and he checks the pulse and says because he's eaten too much, you know, dairy products, you know, too much sweet rice. And then everyone kind of, what do you mean? This is Raghunath Das. He doesn't eat any of it. He just, you know, one of those leaf cups of buttermilk every other day. You know, where's the sweet rice here, you know? And so then when he came back to consciousness, then they asked him about this, and he said that, you know, he was serving Radha and Krishna, and he got some sweet rice, and he ate so much of it. You know, so, like that. Or the Brahmin, you know, doing the puja, and then he burns his finger on the sweet rice. Somebody that always seems to be sweet rice. That seems to be, that seems to be there, So therefore, it's an important element to always have at the programs. Right? Is that right? Yeah. As soon as the living entity returns to his original spiritual form and understanding, he immediately surrenders to the supreme form, the personality of Godhead. This is explained in Bhagavad Gita 7:19. Bahunam janmanamante jnanavan mam prapadyate. When the living entity, after many, many births in different forms, returns to its original form of Krishna consciousness, he immediately surrenders under the lotus feet of the supreme form, Krishna. This is liberation. Right? So here, original form means Krishna conscious form. Right? And so then there's a form to match that, just like we're in material consciousness, there's a form to match it. Right? And then we're conscious of the supreme form, Krishna, because he is who he is. Right? Like that. So we also get from here the aspect of that we may have made that mistake in the first place, been in that original form and not taken up seriously Krishna consciousness, so we've ended up here. But once going back to there, we're not going to make the mistake again. You know, that was the discussion before. From there, then, we'll immediately surrender to the supreme form. Right? Because that's our practice. Now we have the proper understanding, we have the practice. We know that looking this side of the Raj is useless, so therefore then when we get to that side, then we surrender to Krishna. So,
shouldn't we do the other way around? The surrender comes first and then the spiritual form.
Because here, original form of Krishna consciousness, the consciousness is the original form. Then there's a form of that consciousness. But someone has the consciousness of a dog, okay? What form do they get? Dog. Yeah, so if they have Krishna consciousness, what do you get? Yes, so that's the whole point. That's the original form of Krishna consciousness. Over here it's a bit more gross. Over there it's not. The body of the living entity is an expansion of their consciousness. It's not something else. So in the spiritual world you can say that Mother Yashoda is her body. Because that is the manifestation of that particular consciousness of prema of Krishna. Okay? Yeah. In other words, time and space don't work over there. This is liberation. Right? So that's actual liberation. When you get to that platform in the original Krishna consciousness, surrender to Krishna and take up that service, that is liberation. Otherwise, just nirakar, where you don't have a material body, but also don't have Krishna consciousness, that's, we don't actually call that liberation. It means it's, how you say, in usage it's called liberation. But in actuality, is it liberated? Does that make sense? You know, it's just like sometimes the prisoners come out of prison to do, you know, work like cleaning up the highway or something. So you could say they're liberated. They're out of prison. So by definition, yes, you could say they're not a prisoner anymore. They're out of prison. Right? But by a certain time later in the day, then back in the truck and back to the prison. So we wouldn't actually call it liberation. So when the living entity gets out of the material nature, he comes to that nirakar platform, but if he doesn't have the positive service to Krishna, then again, he'll come back into the material world. So we technically don't call that liberation. So that's what I would just refer to as liberation. When we're talking about devotional service, we can say just liberation. And if we're talking about the Maya bodies, we may say liberation. But if we're comparing the two, we'll say one's liberation, one's so-called liberation. So, yeah.
Okay. So liberation is the point of neutrality, like the zero point.
Yes.
And then when you say about actual liberation, that is the Brahma Buddha.
Yes, because it has the positive.
That's a positive aspect of it.
Because it's not about removing the negative. It seems like I have an anxiety, I remove the anxiety, I bring it to zero. But I call that happiness. Where's the positive? The positive is Krishna's pleasure. Because when he's pleased, then we're pleased. That's actual positive pleasure. Right? But we're looking at it that in the material world, I have a problem, I get rid of the problem. I don't have money, I get money. Right? Or I have money, people are trying to take it, I get rid of that problem. So I never get past the neutral state. So the karmis only come to the neutral state, the jnanis only come to the neutral state. No one goes into the positive. Only devotees deal in positive. Because positive means in connection with Krishna. That's positive. So,
can we say that the Mayavadis, by chanting the holy name, they get liberation, or they get this so-called liberation because they have to come back?
Yeah, it means if that's their person chanting the holy name is that, then yes, that's what they'll get. But generally, if they're chanting, they get the name from the pure devotees, then that may have the effect of them coming to the platform where they're not, they lose their interest in liberation, just like Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. You know, here's someone situated in liberation, but by the association of the devotees and the association of the Lord, then he comes to the point of seeing that there's something beyond liberation, that there's a taste beyond that. So compared to material, liberation seems good. But when you compare liberation to dynamic spiritual activity, then you can see the difference in taste. right? Let's say I have something that tastes bad. It's bad. Now I have something that's not bad, but it's not good. Now if it comes between the two, which are you going to take? Right? The one that's not bad. But now if I have something that's good, I'll take that over, you know, not bad and bad. You understand? So before coming in contact with devotees, the impersonalist may be only interested in liberation, but coming in contact with devotees, and if there's some sincerity there to actually know the Absolute, then they'll come to see the difference between the two. Then they'll take up devotional service. Right? You know, just like you see Sukadev Goswami or Kumaras. You know, for them, they're situated on the liberated platform, but coming in contact with Krishna consciousness, they saw the superiority of Krishna consciousness on the transcendental platform as opposed to just liberation. Does that make sense? So that's actual liberation. You know, it's just like, does that make sense? Like, let's say I give you some milk and it's straight, nothing in it. But now, if I put some, you know, put some sugar in there and like that, then you'll say this is that's milk. You understand? Like that. So that's the whole point, is you have liberation, but you have Krishna consciousness. So that's real liberation.
Because we continue eternity.
Yes, yes. Because the other one will be temporary. Because the jiva being Satchidananda, There has to be activity, there has to be results and enjoyment of those results. So existence, yes, is there. That's not going away. But when they give up activity and results, there is no happiness. It's simply the happiness of not being in pain. So it's simply as long as it takes for the position to come to neutral, you're enjoying the situation. Let's say you're outside and it's very, very hot. I mean, like, really, like, sweaty, stinky hot, okay? You go inside the house, and they have the AC on 16, right? You sit down, you're in ecstasy. How long will you be in ecstasy? Until your body gets to 16. At that point, then, now you'll look around for something else to do, like get something to eat, or... You know, but before that, you can just lay down in front of the AC, and that's it. You know, this is you know. Does that make sense? But as soon as it comes in, so the living entity, when they go to that, they go to Brahman, then there's no pains of the material world. It has that nirakar experience. So as long as that experience of comparing between the two is there, it's good. But as soon as it comes to that actual neutral point, it's boring. Does that make sense? So that's what we're trying. So that progression is what has to continue. So real liberation is when it keeps going. But if it only comes up to the neutral and stops, it's not progressive. That's why we'll say the impersonalist, and that it's not progressive. As far as the path goes, it's the same path to get to the neutral point. But because they leave out the Lord in there, to get to their neutral point, they won't be able to stay there. And because we include the Lord in that neutral point, we'll be able to actually stay there. Is that?
By preaching, we often quote the scripture saying that it's by chanting the holy name we'll get liberation.
Yes.
So it may be taken as a extreme, like somebody just by hearing just once the holy name.
No, but the problem is we're taking that liberation is special, but it's actually not. You know, so we're distinguishing within the mundane and taking it as special. So what we're saying is if we have material facility, or enjoyment, or knowledge, like that's good. But actually, the Bhagavatam says, unless that's connected to the Lord, it's a waste of time. So, liberation, we're taking it, liberation is a big thing. Liberation is just the natural position of the living entity, because they're sat. Sat means eternal. They exist. That's already liberated. But because of identifying with the reflection in the pot, that's where the problem comes in. But the nature of the soul never is not on the liberated platform. So that one comes to that platform, that's not the big deal. The big deal is the relationship with the Lord. That's what's special. That you exist. You know, let's say we have a fancy, fancy car. Right? And, you know, you bring your friends over to see it. And they go, wow, that's a nice car. Let's take it for a drive. No, no, no. It just exists here. Mm-hmm. You understand? And then they're going to say, so you never drive it? No. You're not planning to drive it? No. You're not going to let anyone else drive it? No. So what's the point? It exists. And it's like, so? It was existing at the dealer's shop also. You know, it was existing at the manufacturer's, you know. So what's the big deal? So existence is actually overrated, because existing is going on. It's doing something with existence and getting the results of that. That's what has something. You know what I'm saying? So we overemphasize this existence part. Why? Because in the material world, everything's temporary, so it's a problem for us. Well, the soul itself is eternal, so existence is natural for them. So that's why so much emphasis is put on it, because here everything's temporary. You know what I'm saying? You know, just like if you're in a situation where things go nicely and properly and everyone follows the rules and all that, then suddenly you're put into a situation where nothing's working. You're always going to be referring back to, no, it's supposed to work, it's supposed to that. But in that situation where it was working, you weren't thinking about the existence within them. You were just involved. Yeah, you understand? Because it just goes on. Does that make sense? You know, you go to the maha shop, what you want is there, and it tastes good. You don't think about its existence. But now if you go there and it's not there, or it's like, then you're going to be thinking about, well, no, it should be like this, or it should taste like this, or, you know, it used to be when I'd go there, it was always there. So you're going to, you understand, you overemphasize the existence of it, because it doesn't. So that's why then the impersonal path, we make it into something big, because it doesn't exist in the material sphere. So we point it out. But in the spiritual world, existence, that's standard. So liberation is standard. It's like, you know, the blades of grass are eternal. Right? You know, so everything's eternal. So you don't have to deal with that. That's just automatic. So one chanting of the holy name, one puts one on that liberated platform. But now, what you're going to do in the liberated platform, now that's the discussion for engaging yourself eternally. But existing, that's going on. So that's the point, is that it's not an exaggeration. That's why it's given as one of the offenses to the name, is to not consider the glories of the name as exaggeration, because we'll say, no, but how can you say it'll get all these things? Right? But because those things actually aren't that special. So that's why it can say all that, because it's not. But because we still value it, we'll say, no, no, what about this? You know? Does that make sense? Yeah. So, therefore, that's just a side point. You know? You order the meal, it does come on a plate. You don't have to order the plate also. You know, it's not like you go to the restaurant, order the meal, and then the waiter's coming out with the preparation in their hands and all that, you know? And then, you know, it says, you know, where do you want it, you know? It's kind of like, where's the plate? Well, you didn't order a plate. You know, that's extra. You understand? It's just there. So liberation is just there in the spiritual world. It just comes along with it. So chanting the holy name, liberation, it's not a big deal. Prema, now that's the deal. Does that make sense? Yeah, so it's not a matter of sitting here, liberation is there. Liberation is just existence. That's the present. You're existing. If you're in the present, you're existing. Right? But in the spiritual world, in the past you exist, in the future you'll exist. But here, the soul will exist, but the particular situation you're in, the consciousness, it'll be different. You know what I'm saying? It's always changing. You're chanting your rounds, it's going so nicely, then your phone makes a sound, you know, you look at it, and then your mood changes, and then, you know, then you go back to your chanting, it's not the same. Right? Because the form has changed. The mental body has changed. Like that. And people looking at you, it's changed. Oh, what's wrong? What's going on? And then you, it's like, what do you mean, what's going on? So the present always exists. The future and past doesn't. In the spiritual world, it's all the same. It's one thing. Okay. Is that okay? Yeah. So in other words, you just have to take it. It's just, that's normal. Liberation is normal. You're existing. So then, now what are you going to do with that? That's the specialness. Not that existence is special. No, what you do with existence, that's what's special. Is that okay?
Yeah. Yes. When you speak about neutral, negative, and positive, I remember when Devotee was saying that technically neutral and negative is one, because like Krishna is sun and Maya is darkness. So it's not like there's different kinds of gray.
Yes, but the point is the devotee on the platform of Brahma Bhuta is also a neutral and moving forward, while the living entity in the material world is neutral and moving backwards. So the neutral is the neutral state, but you can't stay in the neutral state. You have to do something with it. You have to be under one of the energies, either internal or external. So neutral is just existence. So all we're doing is bringing it from temporary existence to not temporary existence. But the point is unless you take up shelter of the internal potency, it will go back to the external. You know. So if you're talking about impersonalists, then neutral and negative is the same. It's all material. It's just the varieties of the same. But if you're talking about devotees, then neutral is from Brahma Bhuta. That's where devotional service gets serious. And then you bring it up to prema. Now prema is now.
For devotees, it's like the sun, it's going to rise, and then it rises, but you don't see the sun, you see the rays. Right?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, where were we?
So can you say that there is a progression from...
That there is a progression.
From Brahman, Paramatma and Bhagavan, like Brahman is Sat, Paramatma is Sat and Chit.
Yes.
And then Bhagavan is Sat, Chit, Ananda,
Sat. Yes, yes. Like that. So that's how the realization goes. So that's why we're saying that those who are knowers of the Supreme know the Lord in these three features. So some only know one, but the one who knows Bhagavan knows all three.
But sometimes those who know the Paramatma also fall back to Brahman all down.
Because what is Paramatma? If we're using these three as definition, what is Paramatma? How do we define Paramatma? He's the Lord in the heart. What are his qualities?
Neutral.
Neutral. Akasha.
Yeah.
Like that. He's the greatest, he's all-pervading, he's all-knowing, he's... So that is the impersonal qualities. He's a person, but he's localized. So he's just there in that aspect, but you don't see his associates and everything like that. Therefore, they come back to the impersonal. Or, they see him, they see his associates, and move forward to Bhagavan. So the Astanga Yogi could go either direction. Right? Generally, they get caught by... The cities. They do get farther, then they get caught. The last snare of Maya is that I am Vishnu. That if they continue past that, then they take up devotional service. Right? So the yoga process is a process to get you up to that point, but bhakti yoga will take you the farthest. Otherwise, karma yoga, jnana yoga, they'll only take you up to that point. So by using the yoga systems other than bhakti, you can't get above Paramatma realization. Right? So unless you understand Bhagavan, you don't actually fully understand Paramatma or Brahman either. You have a partial understanding.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Śrīla Prabhupāda ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Prema Nandini.